This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich. Thank you so much for tuning in today. When Governor Scott Walker made a priority of eliminating most collective bargaining rights for public employees 2 years ago, it sparked a period of nearly unprecedented political turmoil in the state, and reporters Jason Stein and Patrick Marley were in the middle of it. We heard numerous times through that period from the two state capitol reporters for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Each wrote thousands of column inches about Act 10 and its aftermath, and they continue to write about how that controversy informs politics here today. Stein and Marley published a book this spring about the time surrounding the Act 10 debate. It's called More Than They Bargained For: Scott Walker, Unions, and the Fight for Wisconsin. And they joined us in the studio in March to share the story. Welcome.
Nice. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
What were you hoping to do with this book that you had not already done with your copious reporting on the collective bargaining fight in Wisconsin?
I think it was a way for us to sort of stitch everything that had happened together. There are a lot of elements to this story. It was a pretty intense 2 years. And we just thought that there was so much material there, and there was such a story that so many people in Wisconsin were interested in, that we could tell that tale because of our daily coverage.
And I think that's how it started out. And then I think as we went farther on, we realized that there was more than just, you know, things that we could pull out of our notebook. The project grew. And so there began to be a lot of episodes that were in the book, or some of the most important things of the book were things that we didn't even know were happening at the time.
Well, and I wonder if it all wasn't happening so fast, at least at first, that it might have been difficult to achieve perspective as you were reporting it.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't have sort of the historical and national perspective in real time that you could for a book. One other benefit to writing a book was that we could really get into people's personalities. There's a lot of characters in the Wisconsin legislature, and we were able to sort of explore that and show how that dynamic affected the way things went.
Right. And then obviously there were so many things happening at the same time that often three really important things would be happening at once, and both of us would be at one of them, but there would be one of them obviously that some another reporter for the Journal Sentinel would be at. So there was that, and then there were also, I think, people were more willing to talk about things that were happening behind the scenes once some of the fire and the passion and certainly the elections were over.
Did you, as you started to stitch this all together, were there holes that you were already aware of? Did you sit down and say, well, this is what we really need to go back and look at? Or did those holes become apparent as you dug into it more?
I mean, there were certainly, I guess, I don't think when we started out there were things that we knew we didn't know. But as time went on, it became apparent that, at the time that everything was happening and we were covering it, what the Democrats were doing in Illinois was of some interest. The Senate Democrats, of course, left the state to try to block Act 10. But this gave us a chance to sort of get in a little more to the details of what they were doing and how they were strategizing and how they were fractured yet united, as knowing that if any one of them left, that would kill the plan to be in Illinois.
Right. We knew we needed more there, and we did get more about Illinois. We also knew that we needed more about how the governor had arrived at his plan to limit collective bargaining very sharply. I think we got at some answers there as well. If nothing, you know, earth shattering, certainly some new information. And we also knew that we needed to get more about what was the relationship between the Obama campaign, which was going to have to campaign in Wisconsin very shortly after the recalls, and Democrats in Wisconsin and people organizing the recalls. And there, I think we got some answers too.
Well, and let's go back to Governor Walker, because one of the themes that stuck as the Act 10 fight was playing out was that Scott Walker never foreshadowed the approach he planned to take as he campaigned for governor and then as he transitioned to office. But we learned in reading this that maybe there actually were more signs than most of us realized.
I mean, I think he certainly foreshadowed some of what he did. I think it's also true that he did not explicitly tell, you know, anyone. And, you know, certainly to the extent that even, you know, senators from his own party were surprised, very surprised about what he was going to do when he first brought it to them. So there's that. And we include some details in the book, you know, about people that had written, you know, a voter, a union member that wrote to the Walker campaign and got an answer about, you know, what Walker intended to do once he was governor that was different than, you know, the plan that he eventually put out there. So, you know, there were certainly strong signs that he was going to take aggressive action against public employee benefits and unions, but nothing that really gave the public, or I should say us as reporters, a sense of how far he was going to go.
Right. And I think you're right that there was perhaps more nuance in how Republicans in the legislature viewed the effort to cut back collective bargaining rights than many people might have realized.
Yeah, there were certainly Senate Republicans who were uncertain about this plan and maybe didn't want to go along with it and weren't sure how to react to it. That changed a little bit a week into it when the Senate Democrats left. It was going to be voted on that day. The Senate Democrats saw that is the only way to delay things. And on the one hand, it bought them more time. We had 3 more weeks before – or I guess – yeah, 3 weeks after that before it was passed. But it also galvanized the Republicans. They went into a mode of, you know, us against them and how dare the Democrats leave. And it helped shore up votes for Republicans ultimately.
Although one of the things that was also interesting was that – I mean, you kind of write about the changing political reality in Madison. You kind of paint this contrast between the old school politicians, some of whom were still there and are still there, and the people who had recently come to office before Act 10. How significant was that in affecting the dynamic of how that vote went and how things progressed?
I mean, I think certainly you saw a difference between politicians like Scott Walker, who you should say had been in public office, both the legislature and Milwaukee County Executive, for about 20 years by the time he took the scene with Act 10, but who really did represent a new way of doing business, you know, somebody who had 2 Twitter accounts, who saw himself as somebody who was going to do conservative reforms of government, and somebody like Senate President Mike Ellis of NINA, a Republican who had been in the legislature almost as long as Scott Walker had been alive or has been alive. And yeah, they really did represent different ways of seeing the world and public policy.
Yeah, you're right. I mean that in the Democrats' departure for Illinois to stall that vote, Mike Ellis actually gave Democrat Tim Cullen some cover.
Right.
Yeah, Tim Cullen was one of the few Senate Democrats who wasn't at the meeting when they decided to leave. He got a call. He lives in Janesville, which is close to the border, and was told to leave. And his friend, Bill Bablich, had just died. He was a former Supreme Court justice. And he had promised the Bablich family that he would tell the press corps about this. And so he said he needed to keep that commitment. He sort of did the reverse commute, came from Janesville to Madison. And he called Ellis and told Ellis that he was going to be there, but he wanted to leave. And Ellis just gave him a call before they did the call of the House and made sure that he was out of there. So in some ways, he helped the Democrats get out.
He gave him like a 15-minute head start.
Yeah, 5 to 15 minutes, that's right.
Right, something like that. And obviously, you know, Ellis and Cullen had served together. Cullen, you know, in the 1980s. And Bablich, I think, had served in the Senate with
them
too. So, you know, Ellis is somebody who is still a lot of his politics has to do with relationships with people. And, you know, the new – you know, sort of a new approach may have more to do with not the relationships between groups and individuals, but more, you know, policy goals, ideology, that sort of thing.
You talk about how the Democrats fleeing to Illinois kind of unified the Republican cause, but talk about how the Democrats managed to pull off this departure, because I don't know that I mean it's another one of those stories that we might imagine that it took place one way, but it really sounds like it came together very last minute.
It's interesting because they were meeting on a Thursday morning, and the Senate was to meet that day. Mark Miller, who was the leader at the time, told them to all gather at Democratic Party headquarters, which is just down the block from the Capitol. They got there, and it was a very short meeting. They said, you know, if we're going to do this, we got to go now. And everyone was in unison. Let's do it, because if they didn't do it, they were going to the floor, and within hours, Act 10 would be through the Senate and then soon through the Assembly, and everything would be over quickly. It wasn't – and then once they got to Illinois, they started talking about, well, what do we do now? And there were a wide array of opinions. And Tim Cullen, who, as we said, wasn't at that meeting, he said that he was shocked when he got to Illinois that they hadn't talked about what they were going to do, what the next step was. And that created some tension within the caucus.
And it's interesting to note that even though, in a sense, that came together very quickly, there had been a lot of planning done by then Senate Minority Leader Mark Miller's office. They had actually been planning in a certain extent for weeks a maneuver like that if Walker followed through with sort of talk he made in December of 2010 that he might, you know, eliminate all or most collective bargaining. And so there was both this real spur of the moment element to that decision, but then there was also some a backbone of planning that went back further.
How much coordination was there with unions as this was playing out?
It doesn't seem to be that there was a lot of coordination. The unions say they heard about it the night before and were supportive of it and assumed that it would take a great deal of lobbying, that there would be, you know, because they needed all of them to leave for it to work, and that they thought that there would be, you know, a handful who would be very skeptical and very difficult to persuade, and they thought that they would need – that they wouldn't have enough time before the Senate vote to get them to go. And they were surprised at how fast everything happened.
Why was Jenny Dye such an integral figure in this story for you?
Jenny is she was a protester. She's a Madison attorney, now a member of the county board, who won election with support from unions. But at the time of all this happened, you know, she was somebody that was not very active in politics and was just you know, kind of a public interest attorney. You know, we wrote a lot about her because she is somebody who we could have really picked any one of thousands, tens of thousands of individuals maybe that were there, or certainly hundreds or thousands that were there so often. But she was interesting because she's a Twitter addict. So, you know, she was part of this whole social media element to the protest that helped galvanize them and organize them. And, you know, Jenny's somebody who probably maybe 10,000 tweets sent out over the course of this. I mean, was tweeting at times so much that her Twitter account was shut down. It was frozen for a while. And, you know, she was somebody that eventually saw the Act 10 as a call to action and decided to run for office and is now, you know, making decisions about how to handle union contracts in Dane County because of what happened in Madison.
In many ways, she was emblematic of a lot of people who came to the protests who might have been interested in politics but not terribly engaged, who came there and it became their passion and they went on to, you know, become very focused on politics, whether they ran for office or not, but just paying a lot closer attention than they had in the past.
The other interesting backstory that you write about that many of us remember occurring but probably don't know the backstory of was the prank phone call that the guy from the Beast online site from Buffalo cooked up pretending to be David Koch. What did you learn about that?
Well, I mean, that was definitely a setback for Governor Walker. That call slipped through very easily at a time, you know, the staff was green. They were new in office, and they immediately are dealing with near chaos of the Capitol being filled with thousands of people day in, day out. Somebody calls. They agree to line up this call with who they believe is David Koch, and he talks for 20 minutes. They never suspected. I don't think they suspected until the call was posted on the internet the next day. They didn't know they'd been had.
So it's a couple of years later. Republicans are still in control of the state house and the legislature in Wisconsin. How do you think their approach today, and that of Democrats for that matter, has been shaped by this turbulent period that you write about?
One thing that you notice very clearly is that Republican senators who were very skeptical of Walker's plan but ultimately willing to go along with it are asserting themselves more. And, you know, I do think that that is sort of a consequence of Act 10 and all the difficult things that happened to Senate Republicans. They had to go through two rounds of recall elections. A lot of difficult things came from that decision to back the governor in 2011.
They're asserting themselves more to the governor or on behalf of the governor?
To the governor, to the extent that you see them now with his education plans to expand funding for private voucher schools, expand their footprint in the state, hold the line on public school spending, you see a group of moderate Republicans in the Senate saying we're not going to go along with that.
I think the other interesting thing to see right now is what the relationship is going to be like between Republicans and Democrats in the legislature. After Act 10 and the Senate Democrats came back, The relationships were in tatters. I mean, they could not get along. They continued, you know, they voted on concealed carry then and voter ID and a budget that cut school aides that were things that the Democrats just hated. Personal relationships were very tense. Now we're in a new session. Again, Republicans are in control. Democrats are in the minority. And so far, people seem to be getting along much better. In the assembly, they've brokered this deal to limit debate so that they don't have as many overnight sessions. That seems to be going well. But there's still that tension in the background that we know that everything could sort of spill over at any moment.
Can you give us a snapshot of what life was like in the Capitol Bureau for you during this kind of really remarkable it started out as a couple of weeks, but really grew to months and months.
It was very, very crazy. At times we have a Capitol press room where typically five or eight people will work. At times there were about 40 people working in that room. It's not a big room. I mean, people were sitting on the floor. You know, a big event at the Capitol, you might have 2-3 dozen reporters and, you know, cameramen and so forth covering it. I mean, at times you had upwards of 100. At that time, they were all credentialed by volunteer people in the, you know, journalists in the Capitol, including myself. So, you know, there was enormous amounts of time that was being spent, you know, credentialing French TV crews or New York Times correspondents or what have you. So it was certainly you were painfully aware of how unusual and historic the moment was when you were there working in the Capitol.
And I mean, strange things were happening all the time. I remember walking to the press room one time and there's a protester there who's plugged their air mattress into the wall because it was the only outlet they could find and is filling up their air mattress. And we're sort of looking at her saying, what are you doing? She says, I'm just going to be here for 5 minutes to fill up this air mattress because I'm staying overnight here. And then she awkwardly, you know, manipulates this full air mattress out of the room. You had this cacophony constantly because of all the drumming and chanting. And, you know, you're sitting there trying to write this intense, detailed policy story and you're trying to think. And there's just screaming and shouting and sometimes snowballs being thrown at the windows of the press room. You know, but then there's sort of this festive atmosphere as well.
It was sort of like trying to write a master's thesis in the middle of a rock concert.
Well, we appreciate the sharing of your defense of your master's thesis for us.
Thank you.
Jason Stein, Patrick Marley, thanks so much.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Patrick Marley and Jason Stein are reporters in the Milwaukee Journal's State Capitol Bureau. Their recent book is called More Than They Bargained For, Scott Walker, Unions, and the Fight for Wisconsin, published by the University of Wisconsin Press. Our interview first aired in March. Another break, and then a Wisconsin jazz musician turned New York yoga instructor. More after a break on Lake Effect from WUWM.